morning. This is the KBOO Morning News for Tuesday, May 9th, 2006. I'm Brian Smith.
And I'm Chris Andre.
Coming up on this morning's news, the Portland City Council will hear a resolution tomorrow calling for the impeachment of President Bush and Vice President Dick Cheney. The U.S. Department of Agriculture has been directed to include administration talking points, putting a positive spin on the so-called global war on terror in every USDA speech. Condoleezza Rice has discarded the first opportunity America has had since 1979 to engage in productive dialogue with Iran. Portland area weather, mostly sunny today, temperatures in the mid-60s, and tonight mostly clear, lows in the 30s to lower 40s.
According to a posting on Portland Indie Media, Portland City Council will hear a resolution to impeach President Bush and Vice President Cheney tomorrow. Those for impeaching President Bush and Cheney might want to attend the Portland City Council meeting at 9:30 a.m. in Council Chambers at City Hall. That's when a resolution to impeach both men will be presented to City Commissioners and Mayor Potter by a former Howard Dean group, Democracy for America. They presented a similar resolution last week to Multnomah County's commissioners, which is now pending review. At least 12 cities, including San Francisco, have passed such resolutions in the last few months. Three state legislatures, California, Vermont, and Illinois, will be voting shortly on impeachment resolutions. Under rules for the U.S. House of Representatives, an impeachment resolution passed by a governmental body such as a state legislature can be sent to the U.S. House of Representatives for immediate action. U.S. Representative David Wu is among 36 House members who have become co-sponsors of John Conyers' bill, H.R. 635, which starts the impeachment process. Colleagues Earl Blumenauer, Peter DeFazio, and Darlene Hooley currently are weighing whether to become co-sponsors.
The state economy could get a multi-million dollar boost from wind power development in Umatilla County. According to a new report, wind energy has the potential to grow into a $40 million business and bring new jobs to the rural communities if local infrastructure is developed. This is according to a study by the Oregon State University Extension Service. Oregon State researchers used economic models developed by the National Energy Renewable Laboratory and the university to estimate the current and future impact of the wind energy industry. Umatilla County has the capacity to generate enough energy to power about 46,000 Oregon homes. The study focused on Umatilla County, but other Oregon counties may also have the potential to develop wind energy. To attract investors, rural counties need to explore mixing business development with industry development to keep more money spent on maintenance and supply from leaving the local economy. Land use policy also can be used to benefit the local economy.
Two state panels plan discussions and will vote in Salem this week on plans affecting the future of the lawmaking process and land use. The Process Committee of the Public Commission on the Oregon Legislature will meet today. The committee will consider whether to make recommendations on several issues: the number of legislators, length of terms, partisan or nonpartisan elections, open or closed primaries, and drafting and introduction of bills and amendments. The Oregon Task Force on Land Use will meet tomorrow. The task force will hear details on a draft work program. It's scheduled to be in business through 2009. Panel members will also hear presentations of two public opinion surveys. One was conducted last year for the Oregon Business Association and the Institute for Metropolitan Studies at Portland State University. The other was conducted in February for Metro, the Portland Regional Planning Agency. This from the Salem Statesman Journal.
And for the second time in 2 years, Portland area doctors want to study a medical treatment on trauma victims too sick to agree to the experiment. This from the Oregonian. The trial would compare the normal saline solution emergency medical crews give badly injured patients with two solutions that contain more sodium. Blood is too perishable for ambulances to carry, so medics at trauma scenes give saline to people who have lost blood, helping push fluid and oxygen to organs until patients reach a hospital. Even with saline treatment, trauma kills more than 100,000 Americans a year. Some scientists think concentrated or hypertonic saline will help more people survive head injuries or severe blood loss. The saltier solution may limit brain swelling and the life-threatening kind of inflammation that can shut down organs days after a trauma. Small studies have not found bad side effects, but possible problems include dangerously high sodium levels or allergies to one of the test solutions, which contains a sugary substance. Portland is one of the 11 U.S. and Canadian cities wanting to test the hypertonic saline as part of the Resuscitation Outcomes Consortium. The group has $50 million from the government and nonprofit heart associations in the United States and Canada to do several studies. The saline trial could start this summer and run for 3 years.
Vernon Elementary School may be the only fixture near the gentrifying Alberta neighborhood not generating a buzz these days. Once designated a crisis school by Portland education activists, Vernon scored an excellent rating last year on state school report card. Every Vernon third grader met state reading and math benchmarks. Vernon's other distinction, neighborhood families are fleeing, especially white ones. Only 43% of neighborhood students attend Vernon, the lowest rate of any Portland school. Nearby Alameda Elementary, a mostly white school with a great reputation and few poor children, is the biggest draw with 62 students from Vernon's attendance area. The school's demographics are a glaring example of a trend among Portland public schools. District officials say data indicate that Portland's liberal transfer policy produces schools that do not reflect the racial and economic makeup of their neighborhoods. This from the Oregonian.
And Linn County is the first in Oregon to offer Spanish language ballots, although no city or county is under federal requirements to do so. The state provides some material, such as an online voter guide in Spanish. Under the Voting Rights Act, materials must be made available in other languages if there is a language minority population equal to 5% of voting age citizens of a state, county, or city. The requirement is triggered when more than 10,000 of those citizens do not speak or understand English well enough to take part in voting. The illiteracy rate among the population also must exceed the national illiteracy rate. This from the Salem Statesman Journal.
It may sound like science fiction, it's actually the morning news, but the prospect that suicide bombers and hijackers could be made redundant by flying robots is a real one, according to Agence France-Presse. The technology for remote-controlled light aircraft is now highly advanced, widely available, and, experts say, virtually unstoppable. Models with a wingspan of 16 feet capable of carrying up to 110 pounds remain undetectable by radar, and thanks to satellite positioning systems, they can now be programmed to hit targets some distance away with just a few yards short of pinpoint accuracy. Security services the world over have been considering the problem for several years, but no one has yet come up with a solution. Armed militant groups have already tried to use unmanned aircraft, according to a number of studies. Remote-controlled planes are not hard to get hold of, according to Jean-Christian Delassette, who runs a specialist model aeroplane shop near Geneva. Delassette says, putting together a large-scale model is not difficult. All you need is a few materials and a decent electronics technician. This from Agence France-Presse.
For victory in Iraq in every speech they give to the department. The May 2nd email from the USDA speechwriter Heather Vaughn began, "The president has requested that all members of his cabinet and sub-cabinet incorporate message points on the global war on terror into speeches, including specific examples of what each agency is doing to aid the reconstruction of Iraq." The department's communication director, Terry Tuber, said the email sent to about 60 undersecretaries, assistant secretaries, and other political appointees was also sent to a few people to whom it should not have gone. Another attachment said, contained specific examples of GWAT, or the Global War on Terror, messages within agricultural speeches. Please use these message points as often as possible and send Harry Phillips, USDA's Director of Speechwriting, a weekly email summarizing the event, date, and location of each speech incorporating the attached language. Your responses will be included in a weekly account sent to the White House. This from The Guardian.
Last December, Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist and House Speaker Dennis Hastert inserted a provision in the Defense Appropriations Bill that granted vaccine manufacturers near total immunity for injuries or deaths, even in cases of gross negligence caused by their drugs during a viral pandemic, such as an outbreak of the avian flu. The legislation was worth billions of dollars to a small group of drug makers. A new report from Public Citizen reveals that vaccine industry lobbyists essentially wrote the provision themselves. Emails and documents written by a trade group for the vaccine makers show the organization met privately with Frist staff and the White House about measures that would give the industry protection from lawsuits filed by people hurt by the vaccines. The final language of the provision was exactly what the vaccine manufacturers requested in their emails and meetings.
Senate Democrats yesterday blocked Republican medical malpractice legislation during the GOP's opening session of a health week of proposals designed to win support from conservative voters, if not passage. The dispatch of a pair of bills to cap the amount of damages juries can award in medical malpractice cases has been expected since last week. The roll calls fell well short of the 60 votes Republicans need to advance the bill. President Bush said he was disappointed by the Senate's failure to act on this national problem that deserves a national solution. Republicans forced votes on the bills to demonstrate the GOP's commitment to fighting what Majority Leader Bill Frist called a litigation lottery. Democrats have dismissed the bills as a boon to the insurance industry in an election year effort by majority Republicans struggling against low poll numbers to maintain control of Congress. They say other bills, such as federal funding for embryonic stem cell research, should be brought up during the GOP's health week.
Health insurance coverage for mammograms, annual children's physicals, and drug abuse counseling could disappear for some workers under legislation moving through Congress. The measure, which the Senate takes up today, would let insurers bypass coverage requirements mandated by states. Supporters say that preempting the state requirements creates a trade-off that will help more businesses and their employers afford health insurance. Opponents say the bill would result in health insurance policies that don't protect workers when they get ill. Under legislation sponsored by Republican Senator Mike Enzi of Wyoming, businesses could band together based on their membership in a professional trade association to offer their workers scaled-back health insurance. Enzi predicts that most businesses will stick with the policies they currently offer rather than switch to a less comprehensive benefit. The vote is expected to be close. The legislation pits business groups against consumer groups. Democrats are expected to offer a competing bill today that also would allow small businesses to band together to purchase health insurance.
A former government official claims to have testified to the grand jury investigating the leaking of a CIA officer's identity that Karl Rove harped about the political importance of countering her husband to colleagues at the White House, according to a front-page story in yesterday's Washington Post. Wrapping up the probe, the special prosecutor, Patrick Fitzgerald, has focused on one central question, the Post reports. Did Rove, who was deeply involved in defending Bush's use of pre-war intelligence about Iraq, lie about a key conversation with a reporter that was aimed at rebutting a tough White House critic? The Washington Post reports that sources close to the case say that Fitzgerald is poring through the transcripts of Rove's testimony to see if his foggy memory defense stands up against the evidence compiled that shows Rove was very involved in White House efforts to beat back allegations that Bush twisted U.S. intelligence to justify the Iraq war.
According to Reuters, a former top aide to Ohio Republican Representative Bob Ney pleaded guilty yesterday and agreed to cooperate in the corruption and influence peddling investigation involving lobbyist Jack Abramoff. Ney's former chief of staff, Neil Bolz, pleaded guilty to conspiracy to commit fraud and to violating the one-year ban on lobbying after leaving Ney's office in 2002 and joining Abramoff's lobbying firm. Abramoff at Tony Rudy and Michael Scanlon, two former aides to Texas Republican Tom DeLay, previously had pleaded guilty and agreed to cooperate in the investigation that's rattled top Republicans in Congress. Ney has been one of the Republican lawmakers whose activities have been investigated as part of the U.S. Justice Department's criminal probe. This marks the first time that one of his former aides has pleaded guilty. Democrats are trying to make corruption and unethical behavior by Republicans a major campaign issue. Ohio, in particular, has been a major focus of Democrats because of several close district races and a totally different corruption scandal that has engulfed Republicans. This from Reuters.
A Pentagon decision to delay deployment of an Army combat brigade to Iraq hints at growing optimism that conditions there are improving. But officials cautioned yesterday if that doesn't signal the start of a sizable military withdrawal. The Army said the move has little impact on plans to send four other combat brigades to Iraq in August and September. Military officials also did not rule out decisions in the coming months that could keep some of those units at home and lead to a substantial reduction of U.S. troops in Iraq just before the November congressional elections. The decision to keep the 3,500 soldiers of the 2nd Brigade of the 1st Infantry Division at their home base in Germany was announced yesterday. The delay will give the Pentagon time to monitor progress by the fledgling Iraqi government and its security forces and decide whether more troops are needed. In recent weeks, a new Iraqi government has begun to take shape with the selection of top leaders and the appointment of Nouri al-Maliki as prime minister-designate.
The pending appointment of General Michael Hayden as director of the CIA will pave the way for the agency's emasculation and for the Pentagon to assume full authority over paramilitary operations. This according to the New York Sun. A senior intelligence community official yesterday said the director of national intelligence, John Negroponte, has indicated he's willing to give up covert operations to the Pentagon. The Pentagon has requested increased budget authority also to prepare for the acquisition of the CIA's targeted military operations. The intelligence overhaul of 2004 envisioned that they would remain under the purview of the CIA. The authority to commission and plan these secret military operations has been a point of contention since 2004 when Congress and the White House began reorganizing the intelligence community.
The Democratic National Committee filed suit against the Secret Service yesterday in an effort to obtain entry and exit logs for several prominent figures in the Abramoff lobbying scandal, according to Raw Story. Jack Abramoff was a victim of his own success after a federal investigation uncovered widespread fraud and influence peddling by him and his aides among senior Republican members of Congress. Democrats have tried, with limited success, to pin the scandal on Republicans as part of a 2006 election strategy. Following the successful prosecution of the Secret Service for Abramoff's files by the conservative legal watchdog group Judicial Watch, the DNC is suing to obtain records for Grover Norquist and others as well. Norquist is a personal friend of Abramoff who arranged visits between Indian tribal leaders and President Bush. The suit will be filed today in the United States District Court in Washington, D.C. Judicial Watch recently won their case to acquire Abramoff's records. It seems likely that the DNC will win this case as well. The Secret Service has stalled requests for the records, which they must turn over by law under the Freedom of Information Act.
CIA Executive Director Kyle Dusty Fargo has resigned his post, according to an email sent to the agency yesterday morning. Fargo's resignation was reported on Monday by MSNBC. The email allegedly stated that, in light of CIA Director Porter Goss's departure, Fargo is stepping down as well. The CIA Inspector General has been investigating whether Fargo helped steer agency contracts to companies run by Brent Wilkes, a defense contractor who is identified as an unindicted co-conspirator when former San Diego Congressman Randy Duke Cunningham pleaded guilty in a congressional bribery scandal. The Inspector General was looking into at least one specific contract worth between $2 million and $3 million, which a CIA base in Germany granted to a company run by a relative of Wilkes. Fargo had acknowledged to associates that he may have tipped off Wilkes that CIA contracts were coming up for bid, an activity which, Fargo said, was neither improper nor illegal.
A group of House Republicans wants to do away with bilingual ballots and translation assistance at the polls. according to the LA Times. As Congress readies to reauthorize the 1965 Voting Rights Act, the lawmakers are lobbying their colleagues to let the Act's language assistance provisions expire. The 56 lawmakers support the Act, but say the language assistance to voters, provided throughout much of California, undermines national unity, increases the risk of election fraud, and puts an undue burden on state and local governments. The group's efforts probably won't succeed, in part because of other Republicans' concerns that it could offend Hispanic voters upset by the enforcement-only immigration legislation that the House has passed. Policy analysts said the focus on bilingual ballots illustrated a hardening of positions within the GOP as debate about illegal immigration evolves.
Judge Leonie Brinkema has rejected a request by Zacharias Moussaoui to change his guilty plea after a jury sentenced him to life in prison over the 9/11 attacks. Moussaoui said yesterday that seeing a U.S. jury at work had convinced him it could operate fairly and that he now wanted to prove his innocence. The judge summarily rejected the motion because it was filed after sentencing. Moussaoui was sentenced last week after a lengthy and emotional trial.
Little scrutiny of a recent Associated Press report about Venezuela provides a lesson in how the English language press often gets the story wrong. Take the first sentence. President Hugo Chavez said Saturday that Venezuelan voters should have the chance to decide whether he should govern the country for the next 25 years. But no, such a referendum would not be about whether he should govern the country for the next 25 years. A referendum would be about whether Chavez would be permitted to run every 6 years, and in the event that he were to continue winning elections, serve multiple presidential terms. The AP report's opening sentence makes it sound as if such a referendum would do away with elections in Venezuela, as if its intent would be to grant Chavez a new 25-year term in office. The website of the Calgary Sun even titles the wire report, Chavez Seeking 25-Year Term. This is obviously an extremely poor piece of reporting. Chavez made it clear that if the opposition committed to participating in the upcoming presidential election, he would not convoke a referendum to end presidential term limits. Fortunately, Agence France-Presse got the story right. The opening sentence of AFP's Spanish language report read, Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez claimed Saturday that if the opposition decides not to run candidates in the December presidential election, he could decree a referendum to permit his re-election for multiple terms until 2031. This from the Latin American News Wire.
Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice has dismissed a letter that Iran's president sent to President Bush yesterday. Rice said that the first direct communication from an Iranian leader in 27 years does not help resolve the standoff over Tehran's disputed nuclear program. Iran's top nuclear negotiator called the surprise letter a new diplomatic opening between the two countries, but Rice said it wasn't. Condoleezza Rice said the letter from Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad was 17 or 18 pages long and covered history, philosophy, and religion. Rice's comments were the most detailed response from the United States to the letter, the first from an Iranian head of state to an American president since the 1979 hostage crisis at the U.S. Embassy in Tehran.
President Hugo Chavez is saying that tax paid by foreign oil companies operating in Venezuela will be almost doubled, according to the BBC. On his weekly television program, Hello President, Chavez said a new extraction tax of 33% would replace the current oil royalty of 17%. He said the levy would raise at least $885 million a year, some of which would be used to fund a housing program. Venezuela is the world's fifth oil exporter, and Chavez has used his oil income to drive his revolution. There will be a different arrangement for foreign companies pumping extra heavy crude in the eastern Faja region near the Orinoco River. They include Total, ConocoPhillips, Chevron, ExxonMobil, and BP. Chavez praised Bolivia's recent move to bring its gas industry under state control. He said Venezuelan's PDVSA would take an active role in gas and oil exploration efforts in Bolivia. The company had previously pledged technical assistance and investment. Record oil prices and bigger taxes on oil production have allowed Chavez to fund social programs at home and also to roll out aid programs in external nations.
Chinese state media has reported that at least two people have been killed and four injured in blasts at two internet cafes in the city of Hefei. The incidents left the two cafes, which are just 10 meters apart, strewn with broken glass and debris. Small-scale explosions are common in China and are often blamed on rival business groups. The explosions in the capital of Anhui province took place about 10 minutes apart. An unnamed official at Hefei City Government Office was quoted by Xinhua as saying, "This is a serious matter and the cause is still being investigated."
And scientists in Scotland have found dolphins communicate like humans by calling each other by a name, according to the BBC. The mammals are able to recognize themselves and other members of the same species as individuals with separate identities. St. Andrews University researchers studying in Florida discovered bottlenose dolphins use names rather than sound to identify each other. The three-year study was funded by the Royal Society of London. Dr. Vincent Janik of the Sea Mammal Unit at the St. Andrews University said they conducted the research on wild dolphins. The findings are published in the U.S. journal, The Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences.
The World Bank is warning that the Hamas-led Palestinian Authority will collapse in poverty and insecurity if it continues to be starved of foreign aid. In a new report, it says failing to resume aid could disable the authority and set back efforts to build a Palestinian state by a dozen years. The U.S. and EU have frozen donations to the Palestinians, demanding Hamas drop calls for the destruction of Israel. The warning comes as the U.S., UN, EU, and Russia are to hold talks on the crisis. The Middle East Quartet will meet in New York today to look at ways of trying to solve the crisis. Many Palestinian government workers have not been paid since March.
Bengali. And this has been the KBOO Morning News for Tuesday, May 9th, 2006. Chris Andre edited the news. KBOO's newsroom volunteers and reporters produced and edited the tape. Matt Bengali is our engineer this morning. Kathleen Stevenson is AM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Brian Smith.
And I'm Chris Andre.
And thanks for listening. We clear the air at 90.7 FM in Portland, 100.7 FM Corvallis on translator K264AA, and 91.9 FM in Hood River on translator K220HR. Coming up later on this morning's news, or on the KBOO.